now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Well, what we've been talking about and what we've made a point of emphasizing and re-emphasizing on the Cosmic Switchboard Show, as well as on the commentaries, is the fact that the third dimension seems to have merged with the fourth dimension to create what on any normal planet, quote-unquote, would be regarded as sheer insanity, lunacy, call it what you will. Now, finally, we're starting to see that the mainstream, not really the mainstream, but let's say the surface level truth movement, in particular AJ, Alex Jones, and others, are finally starting to catch on to the fact that we're dealing with hordes of organic portals, as Tom Montauk would call them. And, you know, they go under many names. I'm sure Tom has his own definitions for, you know, various states of muted conscious awareness and entity infestation, because we're seeing across the board more and more people taking up as host the normalizing of aberrant, sadistic, perverted behavior, because the powers that be, this Luciferian demiurgic spirit, this Wetiko spirit that the Native Americans talk about, has overtaken so many people because of these people's genetic spiritual predisposition to be taken up as a host. And now we're seeing all across the board this bitter harvest of all these entity infested people popping up, all these bizarre and perverse rules and regulations, statutes coming up, which are invasive in the extreme, which are predatory in nature. And I've been talking about this, but it's all symptomatic of what's going on. I talked about the safe schools, pedophile grooming agenda, talked about the criminalization of using the wrong pronouns on people. Well, a story just broke recently. Actually, it's about a month old now. Poor little girl, first grader, was sent to the principal's office for calling a transgender student, another first grader, by the wrong pronoun. This boy turned into a girl, and when the girl, the other girl, saw him slash her on the playground, the girl innocently referred to the boy by his previous boy name. Hey, so-and-so, referred to him by the name that she knew him by the previous year. But lo and behold, the boy had changed his, or had his gender changed. Here's an article from truthrevolt.org, but I first came across this article in a conservative writer's blog. First grader sent the principal for calling transgender student wrong pronouns. See, it's begun, folks. Everything has just been turned on its head. Welcome to the fourth dimension. At an elite charter school in California, a first grader was sent to the principal's office after innocently calling a transgender student by their actual gender. There was a little girl who had been in class with a little boy all last year, said Karen Englund, the executive director of Capital Resource Institute, which is speaking on behalf of the girl's family. They're in different classes now, but she saw him on the playground yesterday and called him by his name. The little girl was told, "You can't do that. His name is this name, and you need to call him a her." Then she was called to the principal's office. "The girl's family is outraged," Englund said, "and has already met with the leaders at Rockland Academy. Their daughter was not punished, but the incident was investigated for potential bullying. The mother said the girl came home crying, telling her she got in trouble at school. I stressed over and over with the principal that I am all for protecting the rights of the transgender child, but my children have rights as well," the mother wrote. "It makes me sad that my daughter felt like she was punished for trying to be kind to the kid." This isn't the first controversy to surround the school. At the end of last year, a kindergarten teacher read her class books on transgenderism just before the male student was reintroduced as a girl, the Washington Times said. At the time, parents weren't notified before the stories were read to the class. Memo to the parents who send their kids to that school, take them out of that school and then sue the hell out of them for fraud, because that's basically what's going on. False pretenses. So all these laws that I've been talking about, where they're making it illegal to call somebody by, I guess, the wrong, from the standpoint of the perps and the control freaks, wrong pronoun. Well, now it's actually playing out, where a poor little girl, a first grader, gets called onto the carpet and read the riot act because she innocently referred to a transgender boy by his boy name. Okay, welcome to the fourth dimension. Another aspect of the fourth dimension that we're seeing playing out, we've talked many times in the past about the legalization of what amounts to a rape invasion, where all these people coming from all these countries that have very much of a rape culture, okay? And I've said all the disclaimers I'm going to say about that, okay? Not all people that come from these rape culture countries are rapists, but some definitely are, right? Many definitely are. Par for the course as far as the Frankfurt School is concerned and how they deliberately rigged the system so that justice is not given to those that are victimized by crimes. We're already seeing how a little girl, a disabled girl, was raped by these raping immigrants, and I think it was in Idaho. The perp was let off, not even a slap on the wrist. The father of the young immigrant rapist gives him a high five outside of the courtroom. The parents of the young girl are devastated. The system is designed to work against the victims of crime. It was designed that way. And so now we're seeing with this immigrant rape invasion all over the place, they're bringing that culture in. It's in your face. It's on your body. It's touching you, right? And then in parallel with that, in sync with that, is increasingly we're seeing in America especially the ghoulish, reptilian, demonic. It's bad enough that the cops there are just shooting every dog in sight and they're just attacking and shooting people for no reason. That was bad enough. But now what they're doing is, and they have been doing for some time now, throw the Fourth Amendment out the window as far as illegal search and seizure is concerned, needing due process and needing a warrant, all that stuff. People are being pulled over for no reason at all. And they're being subjected to painful and degrading and humiliating and sometimes quite public invasive cavity searches right there in public, where if it's a female that they pull over, then they'll call up some raging steroid-fueled female cop, entity-infested female cop, then she'll show up and then she'll do the cavity search, right? And these are all entity-infested people. They all fit a psych profile. They all fit a genetic DNA profile, a spiritual quotient, if you will, of just all-out entity infestation. And so these female cops are called up, and they gleefully subject these women to painful, degrading cavity searches, vaginal probes, anal probes, etc., etc. And they pull these people over for the flimsiest of excuses. There could be a gale storm outside, and the cop will say, well, I smell marijuana coming from this woman's car. I'm going to pull them over. And then next thing you know, they're calling in the rage-filled female cops. And the female cops are, if anything, at least some of them, I'm not speaking in absolutes here, but at least some of them, they outdo their male counterparts in sheer viciousness and violence. I mean, if you've seen that video of that female entity-infested cop repeatedly tasing that poor guy on the ground for no reason, he was just standing there, and she just attacked him. That's who they're turning loose on society. Again, it's the merger of the third and the fourth dimension. It's in your face. It wasn't just a case of bullying, of cops coming harassing people, show me your ID, etc., etc. Now they're doing all these invasive cavity searches right there in public. And sometimes what they'll do is They'll pull someone over, and then they'll say, okay, we think you're hiding drugs up your rectum, okay? I kid you not, folks. This is what happens. And then they'll take them to a hospital, and then they will strap the person down, and then they will they make the medical staff give the victim, because that's what the poor person is, a victim, an enema or a suppository, you know, enema, where they really stick it up there. And what happens is they compel this person against his wishes or her wishes to defecate. And remember, one characteristic about certain types of entity-infested people, reptilian, Draco host, just infested with all different kinds of entities, is their perverse fascination with bodily fluids. Because remember, the entities that have taken these people up, who are genetically, indeed spiritually, compatible to be taken up in this fashion, the entities that take them up are endlessly fascinated with bodily fluids, bodily functions, defecation, urination, etc. One of my friends at my lab and had all kinds of experiences. She had worked at one time at a, I can't remember if it was a hospice or it was a nursing home. It was a nursing home, I think it was. And the staff had a nickname for when the patients would, when they would daub the walls with their own feces. They called it finger painting. That's what they called it. Because, you know, by that point, so many of those people, addled as they are with dementia, they're probably hammered with all kinds of flu vaccinations, etc., and all the pills and meds they make them take, if they weren't entity infested before they, you know, checked into that nursing home, but before too long, with all the meds they get them on and everything else, yes, and all the other entities floating around the in and out of the other, I don't know if you want to call them detainees or what, but also the medical staff, you know, Jerry Marzinski in his research and others have pointed out that, you know, those with second sight, when they go into these medical facilities, ERs, hospitals, they can see entities flitting in and out of some of the medical staff. They can see the shadow beings, the dreaded shadow beings working in and through some of the medical staff, some of the doctors, some of the nurses. Okay, think of Nurse Ratched and, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right? So they strap this poor person down. They forcibly give him or her an enema, right? They make the person involuntarily defecate. And these entity-infested cops and some of the entity-infested medical staff, they just laugh. It's the funniest thing. They just soak it all up because there's something about the noxious smells, the bodily functions. I once knew a gal I referred to as demon-infested Deborah, right? And man, she had entities working through her. And to the point where if I was around her for any length of time, I would start to go into a fugue state, right? Go into a fugue state. I would lose all will, lose all volition. And it was almost like the entities working through her had just like would manipulate me and do all this other stuff because I just would lose my will around her because she was constantly putting me in a state of confusion. And I've spoken in previous commentaries about how confusion is a psychological warfare, indeed spiritual warfare technique, right? Because when we think of women, we think of them as being, you know, I know this is a stereotype, all the feminists out there are going to, you know, go into a mouth-foaming rage and bang their heads up against their computer monitors when I say this, right? Too bad, so sad. But a lot of us, when we think of women, we think of the fair sex, we think of like a, you know, just like a really pleasant feminine type of being, right? Well, this demon-infested Deborah was the polar opposite of that. She had this fascination with bodily functions, and she used to say, pardon my Anunnaki, oh, real friends shit in front of each other. So she would leave the bathroom door open, and she would sit there on the throne, and she would be, you know, be doing her thing, and she would have this demonic cackle, right? Meanwhile, the door is open, noxious fumes coming out, and she was like just pushing her perverse behaviors on anyone who happened to be around her, right? It's really, really vulgar behaviors. And it put me in a state of confusion because I'd never been around a woman like that before. It just really shook me to the core, and it put me in a destabilized state. So, the point of relevance is that's an example of an entity-infested person. Indeed, my nickname for her was Demon-Infested Deborah. Of someone who is entity-infested and has this fascination, morbid fascination, perverse fascination with bodily fluids, with bodily functions, defecating, urinating. And so you have this poor victim strapped to this gurney at a hospital, at an emergency ward somewhere, and these entity-infested medical people, if you want to call them that, and these cops are standing around and they're just soaking it all in. Oh, look at this poor victim. He's just tied down. Because remember, the sadistic impulse, folks, the sadistic impulse of being able to inflict sadistic cruelty upon a helpless, innocent victim who cannot defend himself or herself, that turns them on, okay? You have to understand that their hot buttons are different from our hot buttons. They get sex and aggression. They get it all mixed up because that's their nature. So people are being pulled over all over the place. All you got to do is do a search on people who are accosted by these entity-infested cops, and they're either subjected to a humiliating, painful, invasive cavity search right there on the side of the road. Sometimes some of these women will actually be raped by these cops, right? Just taken off to some deserted place, or not even a deserted place. It just shows the lack of impulse control. Similar to these raping immigrants, right? Where they don't have impulse control. They don't even say to themselves, well, I'm going to abduct this person and take them off somewhere where no one can see me. They just attack them in public. Well, that's what I'm talking about. This entity infestation, this ghoulish, reptilian Draco entity infestation. Entities of all stripes, not just reptilians and Draco, but from these nether dimensions. And we're also seeing the TSA pat downs. They've become more enhanced, let's say, where they're more invasive. They're not just patting people, they're fondling them. They're probing their cavities, their bodily cavities. So this fourth dimension is not only in your face now, with all these rules saying you can't call a boy, you can't call a girl, you have to change the signs on the public restrooms, right? In the universities, that they can't be a men's, they can't be a women's anymore. Everything's just like gender fluid. But for some time now, it's been in your face, into your orifices, into your cavities. That's what I mean by the merger of the third and the fourth dimension. I'm sorry if what I'm saying is upsetting to you, but I point this out because we're at that stage now. We're at that stage where it's like Babylon in your face, where literally everything you hear from the mainstream media is a perverse lie. Good is bad, bad is good, healthy is destructive, and destructive is healthy. Everything is just bass-ackwards. So keep all that in mind because I applaud AJ, Alex Jones, InfoWars for talking about this issue, about all these ghoulish leftists and just how they're just gibbering imbeciles. They can't even formulate a coherent declarative sentence. They can't even say things that make sense. They're just permanently lodged in their lizard brain. And they don't have the intellect to, like I wouldn't call them well-adjusted psychopaths or well-adjusted narcissists. I mean, it depends on one's point of view. But there are psychopaths, sociopaths, and narcissists who can, at times, pass themselves off as normal people, and you can have a decent conversation with them. The ones that they're rolling out at these to protest these Trump rallies or protest free speech or protest anything, they're blithering idiots, they're gibbering fools, they're mad men, they're mad women. And I just did an interview not too long ago with Jerry Marzinski. We're going to bring him back, and we're going to ask him, to elaborate on some of these issues again. And it must be understood that in the old days, they took it for granted that there was entity infestation going on when people were quote unquote mad, right? They took it for granted that some people had been taken up as what we would call hosts nowadays. But what's happened, unfortunately, the malign influence of psychiatry, psychology, especially the Freudian model, where everything has to do with sex, sex, sex. Everything is just designed to elbow us back into the R complex part of the brain. Everything could be reduced to the sexual, primal impulses, primal drives. We're no longer thinking, feeling beings. Everything is reduced to this primal, primordial, sexually aggressive state that, we do our level best to keep under wraps. But in reality, according to Freud and his minions, it's there just seething beneath the surface. And, eventually, we have to, in order to be normal and feel normal, we have to like untap that and let it all hang out. And this is where Kinsey and all them come in. These perps and pedophiles, Kinsey, who are trying to not normalize sex and make us feel comfortable about sexuality, but just take the cork off the bottle and let out perversity, pedophilia, everything else, and normalize that. Safe schools, gender fluidity. So we're at that point now where we can expect to see more and more people becoming entity infested. People that you've known for a long time that seem relatively stable, relatively normal. Some of them, you're going to be surprised, but some of them are going to start manifesting all kinds of bizarre behaviors. Some of them are going to go completely off the rails. Some of them are going to wind up committing crimes of one sort or another, or manifesting bizarre, aberrant, perverse behaviors. And you're going to be surprised because you're going to be thinking, shoot, June Cleaver, she seems so normal all this time, right? And but, she just suddenly goes off the rails. If you get a chance, if you can find a book, read The Serial Killer Whisperer, The Serial Killer Whisperer by Pete Early. Pete Early's written books about Aldrich Ames, the CIA spy, worked for the Russians. And he wrote this book about this kid who was pen pals with all these serial murders, and it's a fascinating read. The kid was involved in an accident which resulted in, traumatic brain injury, and then he just suddenly started manifesting all these violent behaviors, right? And in order to come to grips with his violent behaviors and why he was acting that way, he just got the bright idea to start writing and pen paling all these serial murders. And he turned a negative into a positive because we can get into the minds of a lot of these serial killers just by reading that book, So I encourage you to do that. While we're on the subject, let me talk about the psychology of hatred and in particular how easy it is to make people hate. Making people hate is the easiest thing to do, folks. You can see it in extremists where from an early age, Israeli kids are told that Arabs are trying to kill them and eat them and tear them apart, and they're surrounded by enemies. And see, what they're doing is that it's the whole fear, fight or flight mode that they're instilling at an early age, combined with the whole Talmudic indoctrination of innate superiority. So a lot of these Israeli kids grow up feeling that they're just being besieged on all sides by all these phantom enemies. And what they've done is they've pulled out that primordial R complex parts of their brains where they just want to lash out, right? And this is, you see this all the time with what these kids do in the occupied territories in Israel itself, formerly Palestine, the violence they mete out to. Just Palestinian children, Palestinian adults, it doesn't matter. Palestinian elderly, they just lash out at them because that's how they've been programmed. Genetically, spiritually, psychologically, that's how they've been programmed. And here's the tiresome disclaimer again. I don't mean that every single Israeli kid out there is like this. Indeed, true dear friend of mine is Israeli, born into a family that has direct Mossad Shin Bet connections. This is a wonderful person. Love this person dearly. And clearly, this person is not one of these violent types that have gone out meeting all this mayhem to, you know, hapless people they deem as or have been indoctrinated into believing are subhuman demons, okay? So, again, the disclaimer, I don't mean all Israeli kids. Let's make that clear. What these kids are subjected to from early age is nothing less than psychological abuse and mind control. They just get them into that fear, lash out mode, victim aggressor mode that I talk about. I've talked about in the past the British Parachute Regiment, where they have this thing called milling, where they'll surround these two recruits in a circle with all these other paratroopers, you know, cheering them on, and then the two recruits in the middle, without boxing gloves, with their bare fist, if I remember correctly, they just are given the go-ahead and they pound each other. That's why they call it milling. Just think of a windmill, two windmills tilting at each other, right? And they just like pound each other for 3 minutes nonstop. And if one guy starts to pound the other guy into the ground and he lets up because he's got this innate sense of, I don't know, compassion or empathy or something, no, 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 bad. They start over. How dare you let up? How dare you start to feel sorry for this guy that you bloodied and beaten in the submission? You got to keep pounding him. What's the matter with you? You maggot. So they start over. And meanwhile, you know, they're surrounded in this ring of cheering paratroopers, and they're just, and paratroop candidates, and they're just cheering them on. Beat the crap out of each other. Milling, right? And how they get them into berserker rage. The term berserker goes back centuries, and it refers to the tribes would have their warriors work themselves up into a frenzy, and they would scream and yell and just get into an altered state of rage, right? And sometimes they would even don the fur of a certain animal, a bear or a wolf, and they would go into this altered state of rage and screaming and carrying on because they felt that they would be able to take on, absorb the spirit of the bear or the wolf. And that would help them in combat, right? This is in stark contrast to the Spartans where, you know, across the way, this tribe over there is working themselves up into a frenzy. They're pounding their shields with their swords and their spears and making all this racket. And what are the Spartans doing? They're grooming. they're having like a Top Gun moment, and they're applying oils to each other's skin, and they're combing their hair. And because the Spartans thought it was beneath them to, you know, have to work yourself up into a rage in order to fight in combat. It's like that was beneath them. That's what barbarians do. It's like we're Spartans. We don't need to work ourselves up into a rage. We just groom each other and, you know, apply oils to each other, right? Having a bromance moment, right? So that's what a berserker is, where they get themselves into this rage before they, you know, go, you know, attack the Roman legions or whatever, right? And so what they do in a lot of the military training is they want to get people, in the recruits, into that berserker mode where they make them just scream like at the top of their skulls because they want them specifically to get into that lizard part of the brain. They make the recruits scream, yell, scream, rage, rage, rage. You'll see actual video of the soldiers in armored personnel carriers and in tanks where they're blasting out death metal because they want to get them into that mode, right? And this is the purpose behind drill sergeants getting in people's grills and yelling and screaming at them. And for some time now, that's what you see in law enforcement police academies. It's the exact same thing. They have drill sergeants. They have people yelling and screaming at the recruits. It's all to draw out that R complex part of their brain, that lizard part of their brain. Activate it. Encourage it. Goad it. Make it part of their normal waking consciousness. The milling. The yelling. The screaming. The being put into fear. And also, you know, I talked about how fear is inculcated into the Israeli children. That's what they do with the cops. Everything is all about, oh, I was in fear for my life. I was in fear. I was in fear. Yeah, the garden hose looked like an assault rifle. I was in fear for my life, so I emptied out my clip on the guy that was watering his lawn. right? Everything is about fear as a justification in the true victim aggressor mode to lash out. And we see this all the time when the U.S. and other members of this coalition of the unwilling or willing, depending on your point of view, they're going out destroying all these countries because of non-existent WMDs, whatever excuse will work. They don't really say the truth, of course. Gaddafi had all these, you know, gold bullion reserves, and his people had the highest standard of living on the planet, and they were the best educated. Oh, no, they're not going to tell him that. They're just going to just take him out and say after the fact that he was, you know, harming his own people. They are doing this to, you know, Assad, or they try to do it to Assad. And kudos to the Syrian army. Kudos to the Russians for, you know, beating back the ISIS forces. They got ISIS on the run. It's to the point now where the U.S. and the so-called allies are pulling out all the stops to keep the ISIS forces alive in the field. If they're not picking them up and moving them out of harm's way, they're dropping air supplies to them, and they're conducting airstrikes on Iraqi army and Syrian army forces once again to keep their proxies, the ISIS, alive, because they have to keep that fear component alive, right? Because in those examples, Syria is the bad guy, and they have no qualms about hypocritically using ISIS to dismantle and destabilize the regime. It's all based on fear and an inversion, a distortion of the facts and the truth. But they conveniently don't mention the fact that they're using ISIS. But then on the other hand, they use ISIS as the boogeyman everywhere else in the world, right? It's all about keeping everybody in this fear R complex part of their brains, North Korea, nuclear weapons, etc., etc. And now they got everyone skittish about these hurricanes and everything else. That's a whole other discussion, along with all the renewed, or rather increased, seismic activity going on, Yellowstone, and the Ring of Fire, etc., etc. But getting back to the point I was making about hatred and how easy it is to instill hatred in people. And I saw this in the most odd circumstances, right? And I'm going to kind of veer off into the world of sports for a second just to show what I mean by this example. Like earlier this week, David Icke talked about hooliganism. I remember that very clearly. It was just a form of tribalism, really, where the stalwarts, the alleged stalwarts of one English football club or another would attack, you know, the fans and or the other hooligans fronting for some other soccer club or some other football club, right? It was just an excuse to just let it all hang out, let the lizard part of the brain take over and go berserk. And again, we're seeing this all across the board now, people. You're seeing people just jump into cars, not just a single lone nut, but like a couple, like a man and a woman, will jump in a car and just drive like crazy, high speed, through city streets, through the highways. They're just, whatever drugs they're on, whatever entities are motivating them, who knows, but they're just driving like crazy. We're seeing off the wall, off-the-chart violence, road rage, you name it. It's because of this merger that's taking place, right? Where finally, at some point, a tipping point has been reached in so many people that the voices they've been hearing in their heads, listen to the Jerry Marcinski interview, if I do say so myself, an instant classic in the field, right? Because I let Jerry talk at length and I don't interrupt him like so many other people would. So many other alleged interviewers. They don't understand the concept of an interviewer. An interview is to debrief the interviewee. I'm not there to just constantly interrupt. Yeah, that happened to me. And then spend 15 minutes describing, basically corroborating what the guest just said, just because I'm having a moment of self-importance and self-indulgence. Oh yeah, that happened to me. Let me tell you what I learned in my findings. And 15 minutes later, I'm still yakking. Meanwhile, that's 15 minutes less that the guest has to speak, okay? So listen to that Jerry Marcinski interview. He's got a lot of, and definitely, If you feel so inclined, become a member and listen to part two, because he starts talking about the shadow beings in that one and how they play a role in all the voices in people's heads. But getting back to the psychology of hate, and keeping in mind what David Icke talked about, the hooliganism and all that, and we've seen that also in Latin America, where you would have to have armed security guards escort the football referees on and off the field because, the death threats from the fans. Pablo Escobar, that was an extreme example. The late unlamented CIA asset Pablo Escobar, if memory serves, he ordered assassinations for certain referees and certain players, if memory serves, who didn't perform up to standard, right? What I saw when I moved to San Diego and what I heard when I moved to San Diego shocked me to the core, and it had such a profound effect on so many people in San Diego. Let me explain. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was always a big sports fan. This is back when American Gridiron, NFL, National Football League, was really worth watching. To me, it's a boring waste of time now. See, American sports viewers, especially Gridiron, when I call it that, to differentiate it from all these other sports that predated the NFL, that are what we would call football, right? Like, okay, soccer. That Americans had to come up with a name to differentiate football in Europe and South America, etc., from gridiron, right? So they, so I call it gridiron still to differentiate between, football in one country and football in America. And back when I was watching football, there wasn't as many of these time stoppages, play stoppages, which are absolutely meant to fragment the consciousness of the viewer. Back when I watched football, and I started watching football when I was like 5, 6 years old, so that would have been around 1970, 71. I mean, I'm old enough to remember Super Bowl V between the Baltimore Colts and the Dallas Cowboys. For a long time, the Cowboys were my favorite team. My two favorite teams were the Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders, and I had to watch the Oakland Raider games in order to get the scores of the Dallas Cowboy games. And in the process, because I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, in the process, I became an Oakland Raider fan too. And the stoppages of play and the time stoppages were not as common as they are today. And also, you add on to that all the countless infractions and penalties. And it seems like some kind of, law firm had gotten a hold of American football, American Gridiron, and like just created all these rules, right? Pass interference. Yeah, you know what? I watch these other sports like Australian Football League, footy as they call it in Australia. A guy goes up to catch a ball. He's getting hammered from all different sides. It's like they're not going to throw a flag over that. I've seen a National Rugby League where there'd be two players flopping around on the ground. They don't even get injured. They don't even call time out. It's play on, right? The guys either got to limp off the field or someone's got to run on and haul them off, but they're not going to stop play, right? It's like there's no timeouts, there's no out of bounds, there's no incomplete passes stopping the clock, and the cumulative effect of that, folks, whether it was intended or not. The cumulative effect of that is that it's created this fragmentation of consciousness where Americans think it's normal that every 4 seconds play on the field is stopped, whether it's for a penalty. Again, the mindset of inculcating into the viewer penalties, infractions. When you do something wrong, you will be penalized for it. Your team, which you invest all this emotional energy into, will be penalized. We're going to penalize your team and by extension penalize you because you've invested so much of an emotional investment into your team as well as a monetary investment, paying for the NFL package on DirecTV and going to the games and everything else. So we're going to punish you too, dear viewer. Don't think we'll forget that you're watching as well. This has even crept over into baseball too, where they have these control freak umpires, right? after all this time in baseball, they still haven't got the computer strike zone. I mean, they've had this technology in cricket for years now, where they can tell if the batsman made contact with the bat on the ball by seeing the heat signature left over on the bat with infrared. They have a computerized, what we would call, strike zone in cricket. They have all this high-tech stuff they utilize to make sure they get the call right. But, you know, baseball is so bass-ackwards in that regard. And on top of that, the umpiring school seems to produce these control freaks, right? Where, like, in an alternate reality, they'd be some raging cop or something. But in this one, they wound up being an umpire with a complete misunderstanding, or even worse, a floating strike zone. Like a pitch is a strike in the first inning, but it's a ball in the ninth inning, right? When it's in the exact same location, it just drives everybody crazy, the players, the managers, the viewers. And maybe that's the whole idea. I don't know, right? So it's all about fragmentation of consciousness. It's all about getting people to exude all this louche in the form of disappointment, anger, rage, right? I mean, St. Louis Cardinal fans are still screaming about the umpire, Don Denkinger, at first base, who basically cost the Cardinals that World Series against the Kansas City Royals. So all this stuff still rankles after all this time. And you know what? It's like, yeah, you think you would grow out of that. You think of some of the blown calls in the NFL that cost teams, you know, the chance for becoming Super Bowl champions, whatever the case may be. It rankles. There's this human element of the game, but there's also this inhuman element of the game, and it doesn't help when they seem to recruit these control freaks that wind up being NFL officials, or even worse, baseball umpires. I'm a baseball fan more than I am an NFL fan. I really don't watch the NFL until the Super Bowl comes along, because to me it's just a bunch of hype, really. The way they endlessly, breathlessly hype two mediocre teams during the regular season facing off on any given Sunday. And, I mean, it's not even a worthwhile game, but the way they hype it up. And then when you watch the game, there's just nothing but penalties, nothing but time stoppages, nothing but play stoppages. It's a joke to people in Europe and elsewhere who watch an NFL game. They can't understand why Americans would put up with it. But Americans are inured to it. They don't know any better. They've just been watching NFL all their life, or, you know, if they're younger than me, you know, they don't remember what it was like in the 70s or the 60s. I started watching the NFL in 1970. The game was a lot different then, right? Nowadays, there's so many play stoppages, and I belabor the point because it's all about fragmentation of consciousness, folks. So you combine that with the other forms of social engineering going on in American sports, the crass promotion of militarization, the utilization of American sports media to promote false flag events like the Boston Marathon, alleged Boston Marathon bombing, and the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden, et cetera, et cetera. It's getting to the point where American sports, it's hard to even watch it. That's why I still like baseball, because for the most part, I can tune out all that stuff, right? And just concentrate on the game. The NFL is the worst, absolute worst, when it comes to just pushing all this social engineering. But getting back to the whole thing about hate and the promotion of hate and the relevance of it to sports, when I moved from the San Francisco Bay Area, San Jose, California in particular, down to San Diego, I was shocked at the TV coverage. Because there was one guy on TV, his name was Mel Proctor. He was, at the time, their TV announcer. And every once in a while, Ted Leitner would come on the TV and also do San Diego Padre games. But for the most part, the main TV guy was Mel Proctor. And he used to just spew all kinds of venom towards the other team, the teams that the Padres were playing against. I mean, I've seen him criticize harshly a player just for the way he wore his socks, I kid you not. And what happened over time was, and it didn't take long from what I observed, it inculcated in the minds of so many San Diego Padres fans this venomous hatred, this animosity, this bizarre hatred towards other teams. Now, again, I came from the San Francisco Bay Area, so I grew up listening to the great announcers. The East Coast announcers in team sports in America, they've always got the hype. They've always got the reputations. They've always got all the propaganda working for them. Think of the New York Columbia School of Broadcasters, people like Bob Costas and all of them, right? Dick Enberg, even though for many years he did the California Angels baseball, and he was a very good announcer in baseball, he was still one of those Columbia East Coast kind of guys, right? That you always hear about. But growing up in the Bay Area, I know that the Bay Area had great sports announcers. Bill King for the Oakland Raiders, the Golden State Warriors basketball team. I used to love basketball, can't watch it anymore. Bill King for many years did the Oakland A's. And he was in the Oakland A's booth with Lon Simmons, longtime San Francisco Giants play-by-play guy on the radio, longtime San Francisco 49ers football announcer. And he and Bill King teamed up in what it amounted to a superstar tandem for Oakland A's broadcasting on the radio. The third man in the booth was Ray Fosse. He was on the receiving end when Pete Rose crashed into him in the 1970 All-Star game, and Ray Fosse, as the catcher, was never the same again. But he was the third man in the booth for many years with Bill King and Lon Simmons, and he was full of baseball knowledge. And then you look at the San Francisco Giants; they had for many years, well, Lon Simmons, like I mentioned. They also had Hank Greenwald, John Miller, people like that, and. What happened was those guys, they just called the game. Oh, sure, they enjoyed it and they liked it when their home team did something good because after all they're being employed by the home team, right? And but they gave credit where credit's due to the other side. Now, when a player on the other side was making an ass out of himself, they would call him out. And when their players were making asses of themselves on their own teams, they would call him out. Right? So, listening to Bay Area sports, and back then, folks, you did most of your sports fandom, if you will, through listening. You didn't have the 24/7 sports feeds that you have today. You didn't have DirecTV baseball packages where you can watch any game you want, right? They didn't have that back then. You had the radio. That was pretty much it. And then after a while, you had limited TV coverage for the local team. But the Bay Area sports announcers were professionals. Bill King wound up in the baseball, rather the football Hall of Fame. He should be in the baseball Hall of Fame. Probably is already in the NBA basketball announcers Hall of Fame. Lon Simmons is in the baseball Hall of Fame for all the years he did the San Francisco Giants and the Oakland A's. And they taught me fair play. They taught me respecting the opposition. They taught me that, the other teams that play well, they're to be respected. They play well for a reason. It's a competition. There's supposed to be two teams that are competing against each other. One team outplays the other, and then you have a winner, and then you have a loser. That's how it is. But you don't have like animosity or ill will towards the players or the other organization or the players on the other team. There's no place for that in sportsmanship. And then the times when I would head down to Southern California to spend the summer with my aunt, and I would tune into the LA Dodger games. I had Vin Scully, the longtime Dodgers, recently retired. He started off with the Brooklyn Dodgers, second man in the booth to Red Barber, and then working with Lon, rather with Vin Scully back then. If you wonder where I got my opening for Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars as well as the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hello again, everybody. You're listening to Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Well, they say that flattery is the sincerest form of flattery. I got that from Vin Scully, right? Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Dodgers Baseball. That's where it came from, right? And I would spend some summers in Southern California. I listened to Vin Scully. Second man in the booth was Ross Porter, a great announcer for many years. And then you had Rick Monday, a longtime center fielder, Played with the Oakland A's, played with the Dodgers for many years. I think he was with the Chicago Cubs too. And he was a third man in the booth. And again, it was the same thing. It was respect for the other team. It's a competition. Let both teams play. May the better team win, right? Same thing with the California Angels. They were called the California Angels back then. Listening to Dick Enberg, even though he was an East Coast guy, he was very easy to listen to. And these are the guys that I grew up listening to. And then I moved to San Diego in the early 1990s, and I was taken aback because this Mel Proctor guy on TV, by then it was like TV oriented. I mean, people still listened to the radio, but TV, and especially cable TV, had really come to the fore. You hear Proctor just constantly trash talking the other team, trash talking a guy because of his batting stance, trash talking a guy because he wore his shoes a certain way. There was a reliever with the Arizona Diamondbacks, Mike Fetters, and Mike Fetters is now a bullpen coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are having a very good year, by the way. And Fetters was an asthmatic, right? And he used to have to do something on before every pitch, kind of a routine he got into, where he'd have to collect himself and then like look in, to the catcher's sign to get the next pitch, right? But he had a way of doing it, a routine. You have to look him up, Mike Fetters. But Mel Proctor, that wasn't good enough for Mel Proctor. He was making fun of Mike Fetters. Did he know that Mike Fetters was an asthmatic? Did he know that Mike Fetters had to go into a certain routine, like draw his breath in and hold it a certain way, to preparing for every single pitch? I've had asthma issues too. I mean, this has particular resonance and meaning for me. Did it matter to Mel Proctor? No. All he could do was talk trash about the way that like Mike Fetters held his breath, the way that he looked into the catcher to get the sign for the next pitch. It was nothing but hate for Mel Proctor. And all you've got to do is go back and watch and listen to all of his vitriol back in those days. And the point of relevance, folks, was it rubbed off on countless San Diego Padre fans. I came from the San Francisco Bay Area. It's like, I would engage in sports discussions with people who were fans of other teams, and we'd have a very civil, educated discussion. Oh yeah, Mattingly, dangerous hitter. Watch out for him. Oh yeah, what's his name? He's a, great pitcher. He's got like, wicked slider. And you're just having this adult conversation with someone who's also knowledgeable in the sport. One of the, to this day, one of the best discussions I ever had with a sports fan. I was on a bus going from the northern part of the Greek island of Crete to the southern part of the Greek island of Crete. And the guy sitting next to me happens to be an American Air Force guy who's a big baseball fan. So, the whole bus ride, we're talking baseball, right? I thought that was so cool. I found that was very difficult with San Diego Padre fans because of the malign influence of this Mel Proctor guy. Yeah, so and so, the such and such team is coming into town. You go into the game. I hate those guys. They suck. To a Padre fan back then, okay, I'm speaking in generalities again. Not all Padre fans were like that. Okay, there was a handful. I was there for 12 years, and I think I met three Padre fans that you can have a sit-down discussion with about the relative merit strengths of this, that, or the other player, this, that, or the other team, without emotion spilling over into the discussion. But on the other hand, most of the other Padre fans, you couldn't even mention another player on another team or another team without them saying they suck. This guy sucks. That guy sucks. It was just hatred, 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 and it all stemmed from Mel Proctor, right? It all. I mean, I remember when I passed Mel Proctor in the parking lot, because I was going to a Padre Cardinal game, and I was just giving him a dirty look because I just couldn't stand the guy, right? And he'd managed to imbue his hatred and whatever unresolved inner demons that this guy's got, whatever unresolved issues he's got, he managed to imbue that and inculcate the listeners with that same mindset. He infected them with his wedigo. And so for the 12 long years I was in San Diego, that it was just a handful of times I can recall having a sit-down conversation with a San Diego Padre fan where I could actually have an educated, elevated baseball discussion without the person flying off the handle saying he hated this guy, hated that team, this team sucks, that player sucks, right? And it all stemmed from one announcer. That's the point of relevance, folks. That's how easy it is to make people hate. And then, so when you look at all these Antifa types, these social justice warrior types, these alt, not alt left, and that's one name that came up with these people, but these leftists, they're really just hive consciousness communists is what they are. It's so easy to make them hate, folks. It's child's play to make them hate. So I understand the psychology because I've seen it from a sports standpoint where I can't even sit and talk about, this team or that team without someone flying off the handle and getting all upset, right? I almost got into a fight with a guy at a Padre Cubs game. This is the great home run chase in 98, right? And nowadays they bag Mark McGwire of the Cardinals and Sammy Sosa. Oh, those guys were on steroids. Yeah, you know what? You know how many of your sports heroes and whatnot were involved in drug trafficking and involved in, abusing people in the past? STFU, put your negative somewhere else. All these holier than thou types. Oh, I'm not going to vote for Mark McGwire for the Baseball Hall of Fame because he used steroids. And yet he votes in these politicians who traffic drugs on a mega industrial global scale, morons. But I was at this Padre Chicago Cubs game when Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire were neck and neck for the home run chase in 98, which was exciting because the home run chase, Major League Baseball was happy for the home run chase. They didn't care about steroids because it brought the fans back. Many fans, myself included, a lot of us didn't want to come back to baseball after the 94 strike, player strike. A lot of fans vowed never to come back. And then McGwire and Sammy Sosa and Ken Griffey embark on this home run chase to break Roger Maris' single season record. And not even real baseball fans started flocking to the ballparks. Oh, MLB was loving that. It was only later on when they adopted the high and mighty kind of holier than thou attitude that they started throwing these players under the bus. The NFL, they have no such qualms. They don't care how many of their players use performance-enhancing drugs, human growth hormone, whatever the case may be. So I'm at this ball game, and I was confronted with one of these Padre fans, right? He was wearing a Padre shirt. I'm there with my Cardinal hat. And there's a family in, Ward and June, and then there are three kids, and they're all in their Cardinal red uniforms. A lot of Cardinal fans there, actually, at that ballpark. It was the old Jack Murphy Stadium, later became known as Qualcomm Stadium. And I'm standing there just watching the game, and this guy starts talking all kinds of trash, right? He starts talking trash about the Cardinals, about their fans, about the guy wearing the red Cardinal hat, i.e. me, right? So finally, I just told him to shut up. I said, "Look, listen, Tarzan, you better shut your mouth, or I'm gonna knock you on your ass, right?" And he said, "You talking to me? You talking to me?" "Yeah, I'm talking to you. Let's go outside. Let's go into the park lot." "No, Tarzan, I'm gonna beat your ass right here," right? He didn't say shit after that. And I would have, because when I go to a ball game, a concert, whatever, I'm kind of in the zone, you know what I mean? And I don't want people messing with me, getting into my space. I'm there to enjoy myself. And so when someone starts like crowding in on my like zone, I start to get a little upset about it. And then, because I was also cognizant of the fact that there was a family, kids sitting there. And this guy's like foul mouth. See, in the old days, we just called a player in the opposing team in the outfield or something, "Hey, you're a bum." That was just the worst thing you can ever call another player, especially if it was true, right? But, the vulgarity, the profanity, there's no place for that. But what we've seen in American sports is we've seen the emergence, the rise of this hate vibe. John Kruk talked about it. He was a longtime first baseman. I think he was a left fielder for the San Diego Padres and the Philadelphia Phillies. In fact, he was part of the Phillies squad that played the Toronto Blue Jays in the World Series in the early 90s. And he said, where does all this hate come from? He was referring to the fans, right? And it's symptomatic of what we've talked about, this wetico demiurgic, if that's a word, spirit. It's like, why can't this Padre fan, who I almost knocked on his ass, why can't he just enjoy the game? Why does he got to talk trash about, like, me standing there with a Cardinal, a hat, and talk trash about, you know, Ward, June, and, you know, Wally, Beaver, and Mary Ellen Rogers, young Mary Ellen Rogers, young Wally, and young, you know, Beaver. They're all just sitting there in their Cardinal outfits. Where does all this hate come from? It's this wetico demiurgic spirit. And until I put the kid in his place, I was going to beat his ass is what I was going to do, right? But I didn't, because it wasn't worth it getting... I would have. If he would have provoked me even more, I would have. But, right, I didn't want to get kicked out of the game either, right? So, you know, I just basically told him to, you know, stick it where the sun don't shine, turned my back on him and basically defied him, and, you know, he left me alone. He just simmered. I could hear him just simmering behind me, right? But he didn't do anything else until he slunk off with his friend wearing a Cubs jersey, right? I mean, I'm a Cardinal fan, but I've never talked trash about Cubs fans, even when they were losing all those years. You know, I respected them for going to the, you know, still supporting their team. You know, not many people know it. The younger millennials don't know it, but the Washington Nationals started off in Montreal, and they became wards of Major League Baseball. And towards the end of their stay in Montreal, there was like 1,100 fans or less in the seats at Montreal Expo Stadium. And I went through this. I remember in the days after the glory days of the Oakland A's in the early and mid-70s, free agency took hold, and overnight, all these Oakland A's players that I idolized, they wind up wearing uniforms of all these other teams. The following year, I was kind of in a state of shock. And then there were some lean years after that, and there was like, I remember one game, there was like 677 fans in the seats for a night game. I was watching it on TV. And my point is, it's like, rather than laugh at those 677 fans in Oakland Stadium that night, rather than laugh at the 100, or rather the 1,000 or 1,200 Montreal Expos fans, you know, before Montreal Expos moved to become the Washington Nationals, I applauded them, you know? It's like, their team is openly being discussed and described as being moving. They're being going to be uplifted, uprooted, and sent off to another country and play in Washington. And yet the fans, however few of them there were, still showed up. To me, those were the best fans of all baseball. Not the fans necessarily of the winning ball clubs and you know, the fans that filled up the stadiums, that filled up with fans every single night. Yeah, I mean, I applaud that. I applaud them for their loyalty to their team. But those fans that showed up when their team was really struggling, when their team couldn't buy a win, those to me are the real fans. And I've been there. I've been in Oakland Stadium when there were more friggin' seagulls than there were fans. And some of those seagulls were aggressive, man. Let me tell you, all the hot dog wrappers swirling around in Oakland Stadium or in Candlestick, the old Candlestick Park, ooh, froze my behind off in that ballpark more than once. And I respect those fans that stick with their team, right? And have respect. Because when our teams weren't doing too good, a lot of times, the only times we had a halfway decent crowd in attendance were fans from the other teams, right? Like the Minnesota Twins, all their fans would show up. And sometimes, to be sure, there would be brawls and fights and all that, especially back then with doubleheaders and a bright sunny day and the beer was flowing. At this one Oakland-Minnesota game, they were beating the crap out of each other. Pardon my Anunnaki. But those times aside, you know, even, you know, with fans of divisional rivals, there was still this civility. There was still this mutual respect and understanding. And you can sit next to him and have a, even at the ball game, and have a decent conversation with them, you know, like before the game started and stuff, right? So I would like to see that come back. I would like to see the civility. I would like to see the sportsmanship come back in sports instead of all the hostility and the hate. And that's where it's gone. That's what it's become. It's become an extension of this Wetiko virus, this demiurgic spirit that's affected so many people. So anyhow, you know, my apologies for this digression into the sports world, but I just wanted to point out that, you know, that's a very real part of it. This Wetiko demiurgic spirit has thoroughly infected sports to the point where, you know, for a lot of us, just, you know, for me, sports is a release. I can tune out what's going on for, you know, 2.5, 3 hours watching a baseball game. But for other people, it's, you know, they have their minds, bodies, souls invested in it, and, you know, it becomes a huge distraction. So people have to watch out for that also. Anyhow, we reached the end of this segment of Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, whatever you may be doing, have a very pleasant time, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you.